Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gorgeous George and Coz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Thursday morning. We're excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts. Yeah, and boxing. Gotta say it nowadays after Big Fran and everything he's done and the buzz still surrounding that. I'm sure we'll touch on that. Still a few stories coming out of his camp about his future, others as well from the PFL. So, got to talk about it. And of course, the latest news in mixed martial arts. We have an event in Sao Paulo, Brazil. A little controversy with one of the guys in the main event, Derek Lewis, speeding out in them streets of Houston or something. I don't know. He needs to be careful, man. We love that guy. And I'd hate to see him go back to a place he once swore he'd never like to go back. If you know the history, you know what I'm talking about. We also have to, we also have a chat with Jason Jackson about his upcoming welterweight title challenge versus Yaroslav Amosov at Bellator 301 on November 17th, and we'll start the show. All right, guys, since it's just kind of what we've been talking about, let's keep going with the theme here. Francis Ngannou, he is an MMA fighter. He wants to come back to MMA. It does involve boxing. I didn't stick with it. Come on. We got some other MMA stuff coming up. But Big Fran, man, let me ask you one quick question, and then we'll talk about his future. Even though he boxed, but because, and also along with John Jones having only fought very little time at heavyweight after 3 years, and it doesn't look like he's going to be fighting for about another year. Did Francis just kind of keep that title the baddest man on the planet?
I don't think he ever lost it. I thought it was his. Like, one thing that kind of sticks out in my mind is, if you look at the situation, could John Jones have done something like that? No, I don't think he could have. I think that really came down to Francis Ngannou.
I don't think so either. I agree. You asked me the same question, I'm answering the same way. But isn't that kind of what we said about Francis was, oh, he's got a puncher's chance if he connects. Yeah, sure, maybe 5%. But the sweet science is the sweet science. These guys have been doing it forever. If they come to our sport, they give up. We were all kind of saying it about a week ago.
Yeah, but I think you see how big Francis is, and then you see how big John Jones is. Francis is bigger than John Jones. If you look at like the mass that he carries, he would have been tiny out there against Fury. Like, it just wouldn't have worked out. Like, I think what he was able to accomplish in mixed martial arts and then to go over to boxing and do that, like I said, I felt like he never even lost that title. And if anything, he cemented it.
He kind of yoked up. I think he even weighed more than Cyril Gane when they fought, didn't he? I mean, and he's got that reach. He just doesn't have that power.
Yeah, you need that in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, well, I think John Jones would have lost to Tyson Fury, but man, Francis taught me a lesson, you know, in terms of just I just didn't give him no chance. I think most of us were willing to mortgage our house. I guess we would have won. We would have kept the house, but you know, by a split decision, that would have been the scariest. Mm-hmm. That would have been the closest I came to being without a home. Anyway, I guess what I meant too was he hadn't fought for almost 2 years, and John did come in and just blast. See, now I'm going to sound like a John Jones supporter. I'm just playing devil's advocate. Jones hadn't fought for 3 years. He was the greatest light heavyweight of all time, possibly the greatest fighter of all time with the greatest accolades of all time. And then he wins that other title so easy over a guy that Francis, I know he had the injury, but he went to the fifth round to eke that out. And he almost hadn't fought in 2 years. So I think that was a decent case for those that were saying, I think John's the baddest man on the planet. And that's why I said, I used the word reclaim. For many, look, if you don't beat Francis, you can't reclaim it. But if he's also not in the UFC, you can't fight him. So I guess that's why I loved the question that way.
You got to look at what got Francis to that moment in the heavyweight division. You know, he has a history, and then he went on and won the title and defended. With John Jones, it's like he just waltzed right in, you know, and just beat one guy. Like, I don't know that that tells us everything. He beat a good fighter, but it's not a fighter that I probably would have given him more props of beating maybe a guy like Stipe Miocic. But a guy like Ciryl Gane, if you look at his record, he doesn't really have that many fights. Now, he was at the top at one point. You can't argue that. And the way John Jones just dismantled him was impressive. But he has no history in the division, you know? So it's like, you're basically basing everything off of what he's done in the light heavyweight division. And then to come over in the heavyweight and do something pretty shocking, that's great. But I just need to see more of him at that level to really say, like, this guy's the greatest man that ever lived.
Sucks he'll be out for a whole year. And, but yeah, I think if he never lost it, then he cemented it, because he can get down in the boxing ring. He can get down in the MMA cages, octagons, decagons, smart cages, whatever. And I definitely wouldn't want to face Francis Ngannou in the street. Imagine how terrifying that would be. And Jones can't do nothing about it. He only has that one fight. By the time he fights in 5 years, it's just kind of hard to, I guess, back him for that unofficial title. All right. So now Francis is saying, step aside, Usyk. I want to rematch Fury. I hear him. That fight was fun. We're still talking about, you know, the residual from that fight right now. But I don't think that's right. That guy's a proper number one contender who deserves his shot. One could say he stepped aside already one time. And after how Fury looked this past weekend, Usyk is a live dog.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough
one. And think about it. If Usyk does step aside, what if Francis wins the trilogy? That guy's going to be stepping aside for a while. It's just not the way things work, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Usyk is a bigger man than I think, but I wouldn't blame him one bit if he were to say, nah.
Yeah, and I don't think he should. The one thing that we did learn was that Francis's next fight doesn't necessarily have to be an MMA. Like, he's contracted to have certain fights, but it doesn't mean that it has to be the next one. So that door is open. Look, man, I think maybe I'm in the minority in this opinion, but I just feel like he can build that fight up a little bit more. But, you know, if he got a pretty decent payday, and it's that whatever he got this last time, when it's all said and done, you add in your sponsorships, everything, it's going to be probably double that, I would imagine, for a rematch. I think you just maybe you take that money and you run. But I honestly think if he goes back to MMA and just grabs even one, two wins, that I call it a loss, because really it should feel like a loss for Tyson Fury. It's going to fester. It's going to fester in him. It's going to be, if he goes on and he beats Usyk, even if he mops the floor with him, I promise you the first question's not going to be about that. It's going to be about Francis. You know, that's just going to live on, and that's going to build and he can get that fight. I think it's bigger if he waits just a little bit. I'm not saying wait a year or anything like that, but I think it could build up a little bit. Especially, I mean, look, man, we've already had our show after that fight. We're still talking about it. A lot of people are still talking about it. It's a big deal. So I think he could build a little bit to it and get that rematch.
Mike Tyson thought he won, but to be fair, he was part of Team Ngannou. Yeah. Teddy Atlas thought Fury beat Ngannou. Joe Rogan thought Ngannou beat Fury, and I bring up Teddy Atlas because even though he supports Fury, you could tell he loves MMA too. So I feel like he's someone that keeps it real. But he did say that he thought that his boxing was compromised mentally a little bit. Joe Rogan wants, he thinks one of the judges should be launched from the planet, the one that had it 96 to 93 Fury. I wouldn't go that far, but I thought 94, 95 either way was probably accurate. So 96, 93 is only off one round, to be fair. And some of those rounds were really, really close. Timothy Bradley thought Ngannou won. It's pretty split, and maybe Fury will feel that. But I think he's just contractually, as champ, has to fight usage. And I think that gives Francis the opportunity to go to the PFL. But here's where it gets confusing, goes. PFL founder Don Davis, he says that there's not an interesting opponent for Ngannou. Now, part of me respects that honesty from, you know, one of the top brass over there at PFL. For him to say, you know what? We don't have a quality heavyweight to give this monster. And I'm not just going to go the cheap route and feature this monster steamrolling one of our fighters, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm, you know, adding stuff there to what he actually said. But that's what he said in an interview that he did, was he cast doubt on Francis returning to MMA because opponents are not interesting right now. So that almost gives Francis that opening to pursue the Fury rematch. Now, again, I think Fury does fight usage, and I would like to see Ngannou get one fight in. Verdum, JDS. I know I said Rothwell the other day, but he's with BKFC. That ain't happening. Or just one of the guys, maybe the winner of Henan Fajeda and Dennis Goldsloff are the two guys that are competing in the finals. Maybe one of those guys just looks so outstanding, they got to run it. As much as I appreciated Don Davis, I also appreciate Dana White, where some things he says aren't as genuine, maybe, but he lifts his promotion. You got to lift your promotion too. You know, I think the winner of that fight that I mentioned against Francis Ngannou would be fair. The timeline would work. And then later on in the year, him versus Fury. I think what Ngannou realizes is that if he does return to boxing, I think he does want to go for a strap. And now it'll be held for usage, and I think he's keeping it real. He probably knows that's probably a tougher fighter than Fury, because he's been in there with Fury. He's felt Fury, and even though that might not have been the best Fury, we'll say, it probably also wasn't the best Ngannou, because Ngannou will do another six-month camp. But at least he's felt him, you know, and so he's got to have a little confidence from that.
Yeah, and I agree with all that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's switch over to Sao Paulo, sticking with the heavyweights. The Black Beast, Derek Lewis, is facing Jailton Almeida in the main event at the fight night coming up. I think it's 3/11 in Sao Paulo. And so the winner, I can't say it puts Lewis in a position. He's been a title challenger a couple times, come up short. But Jailton Almeida is really, really flying high. He's saying that if he fights Lewis, he's willing to fly to New York and be the backup for Aspinall and Pavlovich. I thought, okay, throwing it out there in the universe, pretty cool. Making it happen. Well, look, if you take down the Black Beast and strangle him and nothing happens to you and you're healthy, okay, go out there and maybe earn that paycheck. That might be pretty cool as well. But do you think he's there? Like, is he a title challenger now? I mean, I guess he is, like, 5-6-0 in the UFC.
Yeah, and I think it's good enough to be the backup. But that's the thing, is like, you don't have to anymore, really, in the UFC. It's become kind of a Wild West. And I don't see why the UFC wouldn't be down with that plan for him to go out there. And the thing that kind of sucks is, for the first time in a long time, I feel like we have these guys that just show a lot of promise in the heavyweight division. And I hate that they're going to end up picking each other off because of the situation. Mm-hmm. But I think he has earned at least being the backup in that situation. And I think it's something that he's got to say. I think he should be willing to do that. And it's actually a scenario that you could see against a guy like Derek Lewis. Like, Derek Lewis isn't really known for his 5-round wars or anything like that, right? It's usually a quick night, whether it goes in his direction or it doesn't. So it's actually very possible that could happen. especially when you consider, you know, what's going on behind the scenes with Derek Lewis, which we'll probably get to in a little bit here.
Yeah. Well, Almeida's 6-0 in the UFC. He's 19-2 overall. He's looked good. This would be a nice feather in his cap if he can get it done, especially if he can finish him and do it and get out of there unscathed. I think a lot of people would be like, okay, we got a player now. We got to lump him in there with Aspinall and Sergey. They're getting it done a different way. They're getting it done with their hands. But this guy's really, really smooth on the ground. And yeah, regarding Derek Lewis, so he was caught going, what, 136, 133 in a 50-mile-an-hour zone. What, evaded police for a little bit, but then pulled over? Was that the story?
I didn't hear the evaded police part, but
or did he just get okay?
That's just
apologize to our
way too fast, man. I mean, given just alone in our sport, the history of people that have been in that situation has not been good, and I don't know what got into him. You know, it's, there's no other way of saying it other than that. That was a bonehead decision. That was wrong. And I hope to God he never does anything like that again. I like the guy. I want him to be around. And not just that, but, I mean, you know, that can affect other people as well.
Yeah. So let me correct something. He made unsafe lane changes. So I guess he wasn't. And he did weave in and out of traffic. But he was going 136 in a 50-mile-an-hour zone. So I guess I can't call that an actual car chase, but that's what he was doing before he got pulled over. But he was arrested, man. He was arrested, released. Now he's got that fight. He gets the fight international. Imagine that might have been a little complicated because at that point, even though he put up a bond, he's due back in court, right, to face the repercussions. I don't want to say sentencing or anything like that because I think if they let him go out of the country, I think what's going to happen is heavy fines or whatever. But at that moment in time, he was arrested and charged with a misdemeanor. 86 miles an hour. I hope he gets a judge that has. There's just no way. There's no correct way of saying a friendly judge, because that really is uncalled for. That's 86 miles. 100. Dude, what was it that Henry Ruggs went? 180 miles an hour here in Las Vegas, and that something resulted like in a death. A death of a female, a dog, a car exploded. A lot went down.
Think about a Mask from Tap Out. You know, that's how he passed away.
Yeah, you know, okay, I guess what I'm trying to say is, had he been doing this at 3 a.m., not drunk, he's on the freeway, no one on the freeway. He decided to test it. Some cop caught him. But when I read weaving in and out of traffic, I thought, whoa, like, that's really risky.
Mm-hmm.
That's really risky and foolish. I can't believe they let him out of the country, honestly, because that's just poor lapse of judgment. I don't want the fight to get taken away from him. I enjoy watching him fight, and I'll enjoy this fight. It already happened, but I've seen other scenarios like this, and I think he caught a break.
Big time. Big time. I mean, like, that's just uncalled for, dude, on so many levels. You know, like, let's play the game for a second. Like you said, on the freeway, wanted to push it, driving from L.A. to Vegas, you know, where you have these long straightaways. But how about the fact that you got to fight, you know, like that? There's just so many reasons why this is such a bad idea. So whatever judge he does get, yeah, man, you better hope that guy's having the greatest day of his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I, you know, for a while there, I think we were close to the Black Beast. We went on a military trip with the Black Beast. When he sees us, he pulls over and says, hello, how you been? All that stuff. But the reality is we cover him, right? He's not like a pal. But he is someone I think we care for, you know, above like other fighters where we may just interview them and that's it. We have spent some time with him, and he likes Junkie. But this is just something that I know he would think is wrong if he read about somebody else doing it. It is. There's just no way around it. But the fight's going on this weekend against Jailton Almeida. I think Almeida's got like I say, title implications for Lewis. I think it's a paycheck. That's what he wants. If somehow he can manufacture a run, like beating this guy. And, you know, I don't think he would. What I'm trying to say is I don't think he would mind fighting for a title again. I just don't see it in his future because he's had a few shots. And he's also now, since then, had a few losses. But he's just been a name for such a long time. I can't imagine he's ever too far from a title shot. Not trying to put him in the Conor McGregor territory at all, but he just, you know, when he had that 3-fight losing streak to Spivak, Pavlovich, and to Tuivasa, I thought, ooh, could this be the end? And then all of a sudden he threw that. Remember that flying knee against Marcos Rogério de Lima?
Man.
So it's like he can just pick himself up in incredible ways, and he's up there with the KO record, and the Black Beast is just never out of it as a main eventer. That's why you see a main event a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, he's super marketable. They like him. They gave him a fat contract.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, the other day, I don't know where it came up. I may have heard Chael say it, but Pavlovich was training to be the backup for the Miocic-Jones fight. So he had a camp going. Aspinall, I'm sure he was training, but was he in an intense training camp? Because do we have another situation where Kamaru against Usman, you know, 2 weeks out, or the other one, Volkanovski versus, like, are we getting our hopes a little high? Now, to be fair, Aspinall's the favorite, for crying out loud. Not by much, but he is. But I'm just wondering, like, are we getting a cheaper version of what should be a prime fight between two heavyweight killers, the next generation?
I think we are to a certain extent, but the one division where you could maybe give that a pass is heavyweight, just because so much of what goes on in that division ends so early in the night. You know, we don't really have too many heavyweight 5-round wars. So if you're going to give it a pass, it might be this one. But yeah, there's an argument to that for sure.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I hope Aspinall was training, and I hope he just turned it on these last few weeks. But after seeing what, you know, I think Usman with a full camp probably beat Chimaev. Mm-hmm. I think Volk with a full camp just looks better. But I still think he would have lost to Makhachev. But maybe he looks like they did in the first fight. I don't know. Maybe he beats him. Who knows? But you could tell there was a difference between the Volk that showed up a few weeks ago and the one that fought in Perth.
Something you definitely have to consider, especially when you look at the individuals. These are two guys who probably haven't really cashed massive paychecks yet. You know, where you fighters who maybe have would say, eh, I'm going to pass. You know, I have my money. I'm not worried about that. These two guys, you have no idea what kind of dollar signs could have been thrown their way, where a decision any other time where they might have said, oh, man, I prefer to kind of keep things intact and really be prepared. You throw a giant dollar sign at somebody like that, they might just say, all right, let's do it. And so who knows? There's something to be said to that, I think.
I think some of this gets lost when Dana says, see, in the UFC, our fighters are always ready to cover, and I'm always ready to compete, and I love that about these guys. And I think he can get away with it because every once in a while, those guys that show up on late notice produce. But when they don't, you're just left with this bitter taste in your mouth of what could have been. You know what I mean? That's the part that sucks. Again, going back to other sports, let's say goes as Commanders defeat the 49ers to advance to the Super Bowl against the Dolphins. And for whatever reason, the Commanders can't go. So now we pull the 49ers, who got beat 42-10, you know, and we just fight the Dolphins. Well, we weren't the best team in the NFC. And now, after we lost, we all kind of went on vacation. And like on Wednesday or Thursday, they called us and said, hey, we need you guys. And we got 10 days because it's 2 weeks in between the Super Bowl. And by then, you know, it's like, oh, you know, a couple guys fell out of shape. They just don't feel right. And now the team that lost 42-10 is going to go play the Dolphins, when the team that won 42-10, they just, you know, they're not ready to go. Or whatever. That's what this feels like to me as a guy that loves sports in general. When I see somebody coming in on late notice. Now, when the 49ers pull it off, then You got the commissioner up there saying, "You see, I told you this is why it's the greatest sport in the world." But that doesn't happen that often. When it does, you can say that, and then you get this feeling like, "Oh, maybe that's just the way it should be. A fight's a fight. If you're ready to fight, you're ready to fight." Guess what? A fight is a fight. All right. When a fight happens in the schoolyard, in a bar, whatever, that's the fight at that moment. Two guys that may not have even known each other bumped into each other at the bar, at the, you know, the pool hall or whatever, and it goes down. This is a fight technically, but this is a sport too. There's something to the preparation that leads to the fight, so we can see the best of fighter A versus the best of fighter B, minus some injuries, some non-serious injuries that they all pick up in the camp, you know, but don't preclude them from fighting, and then they fight. When you don't get that and it doesn't pull off, I'm still feeling it goes from UFC 294 a few weeks ago.
Yeah, because it was very evident. I mean, that the case can be argued here, I do get that, but I don't know if it's as egregious as it was a couple weeks ago, but it can be made here.
Yeah.
Good thing is you feel like they have a little bit longer of a shelf life. You know, with Kamaru Usman, I feel like losses matter so much more right now for a guy like him, you know. And even though he did suffer a loss, I don't even know that we really look at it that way. And I hope the UFC doesn't either.
But think of the tentacles that this thing has, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Dricus du Plessis couldn't turn it around in less than 2 months. He's in some sort of a doghouse. And then because Hamzat Chimaev, really, I think it was more for Usman, because Usman stepped late. He got some sort of a guarantee that if he got past Chimaev, he could fight for a title. So that's kind of screwing DDP, if you think about it, right? He's still paying the repercussions from not being able to turn it around and fight against Adesanya when, man, everyone thought he was going to get his ass kicked by Robert Whittaker, and he actually pulled it off. He should have been rewarded for a title shot. 2 months is kind of a lot to ask, but because Dana White says, "I love it when fighters step up and this and that," or whatever, you see Strickland going, "That guy didn't earn it." Most fans are going, "That guy didn't earn it." You know, it's like, I don't know, man. Sometimes those decisions have these repercussions that we feel months later. So now, you know, now DC's trying to start something with Connor, and if he comes back, he could go straight into the Makhachev thing. You see all this Mickey Mouse and stuff that I'm talking about? Yeah. That it just I don't know, when it happens once a year, you just go, all right, you sweep it under the rug. But we had an off week, all right? We had an off week, and you know, we had a lot of time for this to simmer, I guess. And it's been simmering with me, man. And I've just been thinking about it, how these last few months just kind of fell apart. We didn't get DDP versus Adesanya. Strickland stepped up. Granted, it wasn't 10 days. He at least got like just short of 2 months, like I said. And he's always in shape when he fights frequently. He pulled it off. But then Oliveira gets the gash, you know, over his eye. And now he might lose this thing. And, you know, Gaethje, same thing. He got the BMF. When can he cash in on that? You know, when DC throws something out there like what he did with Connor. Aspinall versus Pavlovich for the interim title. Why? The winner doesn't get to fight the undisputed guy because they're preserving Miocic against John Jones. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of Mickey Mouse going on here in the UFC and in MMA, but mostly in the UFC. It's stupid.
To be fair, though, do you want to be the guy that disrespects Stipe Miocic by asking him if he wants that fight? Do you want to disrespect him like that?
Yeah, especially when the UFC is good at disrespecting fighters. All they had to do was call him. He might have said, "Hell yeah, I'll take it." Me, who's been training, versus Pavlovich, who's been training. And then we reserve Aspinall off to the side. Okay, that's fair, you know. Mm-hmm. When the winner fights Jones, and I mean, I could even go into another tirade as far as like why Jones just didn't get stripped. All the other guys got stripped when it was a serious injury. No, this one's 8 months. It's not a year. It's 8 months. What's your cutoff? Is it 9 months? Is it 8.5 months? Like, this one sure just happened to be at the right time. You know, that's the frustrating part. I'm the biggest UFC fan on the planet, but it is frustrating to cover them, you know, as someone who works for a company that covers UFC.
For sure. For sure, because they want to treat you like you're stupid, you know? And we just aren't. I mean, it's very clear. I'm not saying they have to come out and say everything, but just don't treat us like we're morons either.
If somebody goes, well, what's your fix? I'd say, okay, the Aspinall Pavlovich winner fights. I'd say Miocic for the vacant title. That's what I would say. The winner of that fight fights Miocic for the vacant, because it's already made. I think Miocic is probably falling off his camp. So the winner of Aspinall and Pavlovich fights Miocic in about 4 months. The winner of that fight grants, for the undisputed title, the winner of that fight grants John Jones the first title shot. I think he deserves that. That's how I fix that. As far as the UFC light heavyweight division, what would I do? Since they already committed to Oliveira, and he did prove it, it was just a careless interaction in one of the final training sessions that he had, then I'd say, all right, I guess it's Oliveira versus Makhachev. But if not, if Oliveira even says, let me think about it, I hang up on him and go, we're going with Gaethje.
Yeah.
It's as easy as that. We're going with Gaethje. He earned a spot. Remember, BMF, he's a champ, and he gets his title points. Middleweight division, what would I do there? Strickland versus DVP. Sorry, Shamayev. I know I said it, and I remember Dana White kind of leaving some sort of an out there. Finally, thank God. He did, and I'd say, Shamayev, you didn't look that good. I don't think you're prepared. Pick up the fucking phone or FaceTime the guy and look him in the eye and just go, as your promoter, you know, you got the win. Congrats. We threw a wrench at you at the last moment and, you know, cost is different from Kamaru, but you survived. I'm not questioning the call of the judges, but I don't feel that you're ready to fight for the title. You could benefit from one more fight. It'll probably be a main event of a fight night. You're going to go five rounds. Let's see what you got. You win that. You got the title shot. Okay, sure, or whatever. But you have to put him in there against the top five guy. Kamaru Usman is not a top five middleweight. He hasn't fought a top five middleweight. You do that, the five-round thing, you know, you know for a fact you need to address your cardio. But right now, with DDP beating Whitaker was damn impressive. He hasn't lost as a middleweight. That's just the fucking fight to make. Why is it so difficult, Ghost?
Make him fight Costa. I don't see a problem with that. Dude, honestly, deep down inside, I don't even think Shamayev would have a problem with that. You know, like, I just think it kind of works out for everyone.
That's two fights in a row that were high-profile fights. One was Burns and one was Usman, where because he didn't ragdoll like he did Kevin Holland, he got tested. And when he got tested, he showed chinks in the armor. Mm-hmm. And he definitely, I think we can all agree, even Shamayev, that he has to address cardio. All right, let's wipe the slate clean. Let's talk to our guest, Jason Jackson. He's fighting Yaroslav Amosov at Bellator 301. This could be the final fight for Bellator. I haven't heard anything about a Bellator 302 just yet. I looked on Tapology, nothing. So this could be the swan song here. And I believe, in fact, now that I think about it, Bellator officials, or who is it, Viacom, Paramount, they stated that I think they seize operations at 2023. So something happens to that roster. It either goes to, under with PFL, they absorb it, they buy it, they fly it under its own banner. Who knows? We don't even know. Maybe the UFC comes in last minute and does what they did a long time ago, although they got litigation going, you know, that accuses them of doing this in the past and being a monopoly. I don't know. But still, lots to consider. Let's talk to Jason Jackson. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back with another superstar from the sport of mixed martial arts. Today we get to talk to Jason Jackson, who's got a big fight coming up at Bellator 301. And that's on Friday, November 17th in Chicago, Illinois. Jackson challenges Yaroslav Amosov for the Bellator welterweight title. What's going on, Jason? Been a long time since we caught up. Wagwan, brother.
Everything is Irish. Going, everything is going. Can't complain. I'm blessed to live in South Florida.
Yeah, I hear it. That's what I hear. You're still with Kill Cliff, right?
Correct.
Okay. So you've won six straight, and you've looked amazing, honestly. I wanted to ask you, the Ed Ruth fight, which I guess is going to be similar to this guy in that, you know, a guy that's primarily a wrestler who's, you know, highly accoladed. Could you point back to that fight almost and just say, I learned something from that fight and that's what made me a better fighter?
Yeah, definitely. I learned a lot from that fight. That fight kind of teach me to be a mixed martial artist, because I went into that fight a little one-dimensional. And I think I was a little bit timid to use my wrestling. And then once I figured out that I have to be a complete mixed martial artist, I started to win fight afterward. I just go in there all around and complete it, use everything.
Is it almost a challenge when your wrestling does start working, your takedown, you know, your ability to get up, that now you almost throw a wrinkle in the game? What I've noticed is when a lot of strikers do build a formidable wrestling game, all of a sudden they want to show up their offensive wrestling.
Well, wrestling is my base. Wrestling is my first art that I learned. And the fact that I never wrestled in college or whatnot, I didn't think I was a good wrestler, because I was fighting against guys that, you know, that had a lot of credential as far as wrestling goes. So, you know, I kind of leave that out a little bit and just kind of rely on my striking, because I learned boxing afterward. And then as I realized that, you know, it's not wrestling, it's mixed martial arts, I started to capitalize on that, just use everything, because it makes everything a little more easier.
Well, you had me fooled. I definitely would have thought striking would have been the first talent that you had, because you're a really, really good striker. But that's great to know that wrestling, I guess, was where it all started. And that means you've embraced the grind and the weight cut and breaking people and trying to not get broken.
Right, right. And that's what I figure out. Wrestling kind of dictate the pace. You know, as far as martial art, you know, if you want to stand up or if you don't want to go to the ground, you definitely have to embrace the grind, like you said.
Hey, listen, how far back do you go with Killcliff, Combat, you know, everything? I mean, was Rashad Evans almost one of the guys, one of the OGs that kind of helped you embrace that grind?
Absolutely. Rashad Evans is like the one that actually kind of make me realize how to be a real mixed martial artist and how to put it together since the Black Zillion days, you know. So Rashad Evans is one of the guys that I have to give a lot of credit to why I'm the mixed martial artist I am, you know. He teaches me how to put it together and how to strike, how to lever change and feint. Yeah, Rashad, I have to give most of my credit to, definitely.
Since we're talking about OGs, how about Anthony Johnson? Give me a good memory of him, a technique he taught you or something he might have said to you that you've carried with you all these years.
Anthony Johnson is a role model. I always tell him, and he look at me like I'm crazy, because he is one guy that, you know, always just able to shock everybody. And the power that he brings to the game, you know, that's like, I don't think you're not going to see that in nobody, you know. And that guy, like, he hit so hard, I used to spar with him and move around with him. And it just made me, like, overcome a lot of fear. Like, if I could stand and move around with Anthony Rumble, then I shouldn't have no fear with no one else. So, you know, that reminds me of Anthony Johnson a lot.
And, of course, I'm sure you know this, but he was once at 170. Can you believe that?
Ridiculous. I can't believe up to this day.
Yeah, that is a car crash, except as big as he was, it was almost like you're running into a semi and you're the car. A lot of people don't remember that part of his career.
I'm happy that he was around when I was around at 170. That guy got some crazy power.
Yeah, you know, it's fun to reminisce. That team is now probably about 12 years old, but if we tie it into John Jones, it's funny how that split between Rashad Evans and John Jones produced this massive, successful team that is now called Kill Cliff. You know, a lot of people may not know that history, but you know, that rivalry spawned something pretty special.
Right, definitely. Well, you know, everything happened for a reason. Nothing never happened, you know, for a purpose. You know, everything happened for a reason.
For sure. Jason Jackson joining us here on MMA Junkie Radio. He fights at Bellator 301 on November 17th. It's a Friday, and Showtime's got you covered. This is the main event, and Jackson will be challenging Yaroslav Amosov for his welterweight title. All right, Goes, what do you have for Jason Jackson?
Jason, can you maybe tell us a little bit about the journey and getting to this moment? Were you happy with the way everything went down and now where it's at? Time and place, did it all just kind of fall into sort of the plan that you had in your head when you envisioned this moment?
Well, I'm excited, and I have no complaint whatsoever the road that I had to take to get here, because like I said, everything happened for a reason, and you know, I had to work and earn my title shot. And when I go out there, you know, a man who earned his way here is not going to just give it all up. You had to kill me to get it from me, because it wasn't given to me, and I'm not going to take it for granted. So if they think I'm just going to come and lay down and try to take a tech, definitely get my hand raised, and I'm going to put every single thing into it that I have. You know what I'm saying? I'm dedicated. I'm motivated. And I have beat champions, former UFC guys. So it just tell you that, you know, I belong here. I have earned my way here. And, you know, I didn't, like, get up and just said, complain. I was just patient. Whatever they wanted me to do, if they wanted to fight another fight, I will fight another fight. I didn't complain, you know. I just put in my work. And, you know, it come to here where I'm going to get what I deserve.
Can you talk about maybe your confidence level throughout this journey? Because you're right, when you break down all the fighters you fought, the most impressive thing to me are the skill sets. You have some of the best guys with some of these high-level skill sets in grappling, striking, wrestling. You've been through a lot of that. What does that do for your confidence level now going into a fight like this?
Well, that's what braids me to be this guy who I am, and know that I have to beat Jason Jackson the night of the fight. And most of the guys that I fought, it's just my skill to adapt. You know, I'm just a good person at adapting. And it's not like I knew I had those skills. I had to find out the moment when I fought guys like Neymar Gracie and went to the ground. I'm not a jiu-jitsu practitioner. And the fact that I was willing to find out in there, fight against guys like Paul Dale with the power, you know, I was always willing and able to go find out. And you know what they say, once there's a will, there's a way. And that's why I am the guy who I am, the ass-kicking machine.
George talked about that training room that you're in. It's just full of killers everywhere. When you look at Amosov and his career, where do you think he ranks globally in the world as far as what he's been able to accomplish and where he's at today?
Yaroslav is one of the best welterweight on this planet, if not the best welterweight on the planet, because the record that he brings to the table and the skill set, he knows how to win fight. And yeah, he's been fighting for a while. He fought a lot of tough guys, you know what I'm saying? So I would say he up there in the rankings. You have guys right now in the UFC, like, you know what I'm saying, Shefkat, Gilbert Burns, and guys like that, you know what I'm saying, that they're good. So it's a lot of guys in our room that, you know what I'm saying, that definitely could put up on the pedestal with him. So I'm going to consider that he's one of the best, if not the best.
At USA Today and MMA Junkie, we have him at number 5. We rank world, not just the UFC. We rank PFL, Bellator, one championship. So yeah, man, we know 27-0 is quite the resume. He's got some title defenses. He doesn't lose very many rounds. He's pretty pretty amazing fighter. And you, along with that streak you have an excellent record. Man, that could really catapult you up there as well. That's got to feel pretty good.
Right. So once I beat this guy, where that puts me?
That is a good question, and I'll have to figure it out. You know, and I'm happy to do it, man. On November 20th, we'll release our rankings that week, and we'll see. But hey, at least you know there's a target. You got to get that O off them, that title off them, that ranking off them. I mean, you must. I gotta imagine you probably want to fight tonight. How prepared are you? Did you go 120% for this camp?
Well, I put everything in it. I cross all my T's and dot all my I's, because that's what, when I go there, there's nothing that no one can say, hey, this guy didn't put his all into it. And I strive on adversity. And when it comes time to shine, I'm always going to prevail above the odds. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm going to be the guy. And one thing I know, I am not afraid. I am not afraid to go in there and find out. I don't have nothing to lose. I have everything to win, everything to gain from this fight. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it, I tell you.
Jason, this might be a reach. And if it is, just say, that's a reach, bro. But is there anything to the couple of losses that you've taken have been ATT related? I don't know if there's still the rivalry or what, because you're an OG, I'm asking, right? But will it feel good to also, like I say, the title, give them that first O, you know, everything that comes with it? But would it be nice? Do you carry any of that as well?
No, because I have more victories over my top team than losses. So I never really look back at that. A fight is a fight. Mm-hmm. You know, fight is a fight to me. So I will say it's a reach.
Okay. Let me ask you something about how talented your room is. There's a lot of killers in your room. And I've been following the Ian Garry story where he kind of left, went to another gym. It seemed like he wasn't welcome there as well. How have you been able to manage fighting, training with all these high-level fighters, but also, I guess, keeping the bond, the friendship, the respect, and not having a split, which not only can affect you and the other guy, but also the coaches?
Well, I've been around for such a long time. I've been there since the beginning, and I'm already used to the fact that people come and go, so it's nothing that I take to the head or anything. People just come and go, just like a job. Show uh-huh. must go on. So I never really look too much into it or take it personal. You know, most of the people are just co-workers.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is, like I say, you've been there for such a long time. I imagine there's some seniority, and you got a good foundation there with Henry Hooft and the rest of the guys. One other tough question here, but it's reality. We have to deal with it. This could be a final event for Bellator, and you might actually be the final fight. Now, I don't know. Maybe the name continues elsewhere. Who knows? I don't know. But has that in any way interrupted your training, you know, kind of like a little bit of uncertainty at all?
No, I feel good, because you know why? I was like, Bellator is pretty smart. They save the best for the last. Why not go out like that? If that's
Look
the way
at
they
you.
Go out.
That's quite the answer. I love it. I love it. Hey, look, it's a fabulous promotion. We all hope they keep going somehow. But this is an outstanding card in Chicago, Illinois. Two title fights, you know, some Grand Prix stuff going on. It's really, really stacked. I'll be tuning in. And, folks, I encourage you all to tune in. And this cat has really put in some work. He's beat some top names. He deserves his title shot, and it's against the proper champion. So tune in. And, Jason, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me, and it's always been a pleasure to come on MMA Junkie and discuss with you guys. You know, thank you so much for giving us a platform to, you know, connect with the audience and everything. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Those are some kind words, and we appreciate it. One last thing. Are you a Top Boy fan?
Top Boy, what's that?
On Netflix. You don't know what that is?
Oh, no.
You gotta check it out, man. It's
Top Boy. I don't.
The UK and Jamaica. Yeah, that's why I started with Wagwan, brother. But I think it went over your head.
No, because I mean, YouTube been kicking Netflix butt, so I've been more on YouTube. So
YouTube's rocking, but I'm telling you, Netflix. It's only three seasons. And I guarantee you, after the fight, you'll be telling the Bellator guys, hey, put me back on Junkie. I got to give those guys a fist bump. because that's all one right. hell of a series.
Now I'm gonna check it out tonight for sure. 100%.
Top Boy, you'll love Top Boy. I promise all you. Right. Yeah. yeah. All right, take care, Jason.
All right, thank you guys again, and thank appreciate you, it.
Hmm. Well, at least he had a nice answer to the question, right? Save the best for last.
yeah.
Poor guy, though. If he wins, at least he gets the belt off a champ. I think that's so big when you can take it from the undisputed. That kind of helps catapult you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if you can put that O on Yaroslav's record, that would be pretty amazing.
It's an uphill battle.
Is if Bellator doesn't stick around, he wouldn't have his first title defense. That's kind of a bummer, but that's just the hand he's been dealt. We've known that guy for a long time, and he's on a roll right now. So thank you for the time, Jason Jackson. All right, a few more things here. So there will be a watch along for UFC 295 on November 11th. Tune in. We'll go back to doing 9 fights. There's no time change or anything like that. That's why we did it. It wasn't because I was in South America. It was because the fights started really early in Abu Dhabi. And so that's why we only kind of covered the last 5. But the watch along is on for November 11th, 9 fights total, 8 Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. For that, we'll keep reminding you as we get closer to the event. This one's just kind of an update, and I'll read because it has to do with legal language. Let me just read it. Plaintiffs strike key win in UFC antitrust lawsuit after judges deny defendants' appeal. The plaintiffs, everybody, would be that group of fighters like I think it's Brandon Vera and Kong Lee and John Fitch and Randy Couture versus the defendant, who in this case is the UFC. So here's what the article reads. A pair of judges have denied the UFC's request to appeal class certification in its ongoing antitrust lawsuit. In August, the lawsuit filed in 2014 by former UFC fighters seeking damages from the promotion was granted about class certification in the U.S. District Court in Las Vegas. The UFC's legal team said they anticipated the decision and planned to appeal the decision by federal judge Richard Boulware. In response, the plaintiffs filed a 30-page opposition brief in September stating the promotion appeal did not address extensive evidence in support of class certification. In a one-page document filed Wednesday, two judges with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals denied the appeal request from the promotion's attorney. The decision is a key win for the plaintiffs, who include, oh, here we go, former UFC fighters Kung Lee, John Fitch, Kyle Kingsbury, Brandon Vera, amongst others. Here's what Kung Lee had to say about it on X, formerly Twitter. The Ninth Circuit has denied the UFC's request to appeal our class certification order on to trial. We are making progress in court. Now we need at Senator Mullen help to get us the same legal protections as boxers, which allows them to compete in sport. Shall I continue, guys? Is this okay?
Sure.
Okay. It's almost over. The former fighters allege that the UFC suppressed fighter pay through anti-competitive tactics, such as shutting out competition and controlling the market for top-level fighters from 2010 to 2017. They seek $811 million to $1.6 billion in damages from the Las Vegas-based promotion, which could apply to 1,200 fighters during the time period alleged in the lawsuit. Judge Boulware previously stated he intends to make the case a priority, hoping to hold the trial in March or April of 2024. That's around the time of UFC 300, by the way. He says a decade after the initial filing, the rejection of the UFC's appeal means the case is one step closer to reaching trial, although there are more hurdles to be cleared. The promotion is also dealing with another antitrust lawsuit headed by Kajon Johnson, who fought from the UFC from 2014 to 2018. The case is similar to the one headed by Lee. However, it covers fighters who competed from June of 2017 to present day. One thing I think I want to throw in, although I'm not sure, but I think these damages can be tripled, goes. So that $811 million to $1.6 billion, I think they can triple when it has to do with these class action lawsuits, but I'm not positive, so I'm just kind of throwing that out. There's a Scooby snack from a guy that's definitely not a lawyer. And the last thing I want to say is regarding about class certification, That means that they can collectively file suit against the UFC for alleged violations of antitrust laws. So I believe that's going as a group versus maybe going individually or something like that. But I remember that was the definition a while back. All persons who competed in one or more live UFC promoted MMA bouts taking place or broadcast in the United States from December 16th to 2010 to June 30th, 2017. The bout class excludes all persons who are not residents or citizens of the United States unless the UFC paid such persons for competing in a bout fought in the United States. So a Russian or Brazilian who is not a citizen of the United States or resident of the United States, if they fought in the United States, then they can be a part of this. So that was kind of the deal with that. If you read the article on MMA Junkie, it'll take you to links if you want to know a little bit more of that. And always a shout out to John Nash, who works for Bloody Elbow. He seems to be a guy that covers this very, very well and does a lot of other extensive reporting. Nothing wrong with giving respect to the competitor, but like I say, he does do a good job with that. So it goes closer to trial for these guys. I think I did the math one time, and I thought each fighter could individually make $1 million.
Yeah?
Who would say no to that, right? I believe, yeah, I think I did it once, the 1,200 fighters, if they did triplicate the winnings. I mean, look, let's just say they won $811 million. What's that? That's 81 million. Yeah. Divided by 1,200 fighters is $675,000. So maybe I did the $1.6 billion if they did that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That wouldn't be the end of the world for each fighter, I guess, if all 1,200 fighters are in this, but that's what they fought for bout class certification.
Yeah, it's crazy the amount of time and effort that's gone into this. And I really hope, there are some people that are on the battlefield. And there are some people that just kind of signed up and I think are on the outside looking in. But the people that the generals out there that are really out there slugging it out have been through a lot. You know, Kung Lee, Randy Couture, Carlos Newton, guys like that. John Fitch, they have really, really gone out there and put themselves on the line, their careers, their gyms, everything to get what they feel like they deserve, what's right.
Yeah. What do you think of Benil Dariush versus Armin Sarukian in Austin in December? That's a great matchup.
I like it. Yeah, I think it was great matchmaking.
That definitely allows Benil to get back in the mix. And for Armin Sarukian, that's a high-profile fighter. That can put him in that sphere to, you know, possibly challenge Islam Makhachev.
And I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if that was the exact wording in that war room when they put that together, because that's what that is. It's very clear.
And don't you like it? It's kind of pure, right? The guy that's kind of coming up versus the guy that just got notched down a little bit by Charles Oliveira. They're kind of meeting. I think it's fair. I didn't think that Benil Dariush on 8 fights shouldn't have already fought for the title, but that's in the past. He already did, and he lost to Oliveira. But that's good matchmaking. I like that right there. So even though he shit on them earlier, that I believe is solid.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, speaking of Randy Couture, he's number 11 on our list of the 30 greatest UFC fighters in history. We've done a 30 fighter countdown since I think October 12th, leading into November 11th, counting down the 30 greatest fighters. It's been controversial. There's been some battles going on in the Instagram comments, X comments, Facebook comments, but it's been fun and respectful. And I've been proud of what we've done, and it's been kind of cool to see that go down.
Yeah, I can't wait for the opportunity where we can all just maybe even share our own personal lists, because we all made our own lists. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of elaborate a little bit more on why certain decisions were made.
There was one guy that told me, well, then where's Sakuraba? He better be up there because he beat all the Gracies. Slow down, pal. Everything you just said is the truth, all right? But he's 1-0 in the UFC, all right? He only had one fight in the UFC. That's it. This is the list. Did you not pay attention of the great 30 greatest fighters in the UFC? He beat Hoist outside the UFC. Then he lost to Hoist once when they were both like 50 years old. But that one fight that happened overseas. It happened in Japan. The one that went 180 minutes and they threw the towel in or whatever. But fair point. He is a Gracie killer. That's why he deserves that name. He's a legend, Hall of Famer, everything. But listen to what the name of the contest is or whatever this is, a countdown, tribute. And Hoist won three tournaments. That's like winning three titles. And in each tournament, he had to do at least three per night, open weight class, submitted everyone, different types of chokes as well. And one of them, he had to do four in one night. That's why that dude was at number 13 or something like that. 12. And Randy Couture is 11. And the countdown's on. And goes, what did we say about your 30 food, best food countdown? Did we brought it up the other day, I think.
Yeah. If you want next show, I'll figure out where we left off and I'll fill in the gap there.
Give us your number 30 to 21 in the next show. All right.
Well, I can do it right now if you want.
Yeah, give us 30 through 21. Goes is these are the best foods. Do you want to define it in any way? Or is this a goes list? Or you and some top chefs got together? Or what happened?
It's kind of a me list mixed with, I guess my criteria are the popularity of the food. You know, like just there's certain foods that I probably wouldn't have ranked as high, but I can't deny that people love these dishes. So it's a mixture of everything, you know. There's a few that I probably will have close to the top that maybe some people have never even had before, but it is a goes list, so I have to make an exception here and there. But I'm not going to throw duck a l'orange as number four. Like, who the fuck's had that, right? So it's got to be things that I think people are somewhat familiar with. And so 30 is ropa vieja. It's a Cuban dish. Number 29 is chicken tikka masala. Number 28, chicken wings. The appetizer-ish and soups and sandwiches are going to be more towards the top because, you know, some of them have become proper meals like wings, but I don't know that that's main eventing on anybody's day. Pad see ew comes in at 27. That's another Thai dish. Fish and chips came in at 26. Not that popular here in the States, but it is.
Yeah, you
popular.
Were quite generous in my book on that one.
ramen comes in at 25. Lobster roll comes in at 24. Chicken parmesan, 23.
Ooh.
Paella is 22. Lobster bisque is 21. Is that where you wanted me to stop?
Yeah, I think that's good. And then the next show, maybe you can do 20 through 11, and then depending on where we match up, I think it'd be pretty good that last show, maybe the last show before UFC 295 or the Monday after UFC 295, we can set aside to, because we'll know that we'll have the culmination of our 30 greatest fighters list, and so then you can reveal. Maybe we'll split that into two fives, but yeah, we'll do 20 to 11 on the next one, and let's see if you guys have any feedback on Goz's list. But with that, folks, we're out of here. Thank you to Jason Jackson for his time, the Bellator team. I know it's got to be tough for them, man, to hear that type of stuff. But it's reality, and we have to deal with reality. There's some fine people like a Burt Watson and a Scott Coker and a Danny Brenner and his team, Jim, that helps us out a lot, CJ. And if something were to happen, obviously we would do everything we can to promote these people to land, you know, in similar jobs or whatever, but stay in the industry, because it's all about having good people in the industry. And those are some pretty good people. They've proven themselves. Anyways, again, thank you, Jason Jackson. Thank you all for listening to our show. We will catch you on Monday. Don't forget to watch along on the 11th. And don't forget every Monday, a live spinning back click, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. We're out of here. Go out and be a champion.
just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.